Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, September 8th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers are about 48 hours, a little bit more, away from opening the regular season against the Seattle Seahawks Sunday afternoon at Lambeau Field. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I'm here, as always, with colleague Tom Silverstein. The Packers have had their busiest practice of the week yesterday, Thursday afternoon. It was their only padded session of the week, and all that stands between them and Seattle now is their Saturday practice, which is a little bit lighter, a little bit something in between a practice and a walkthrough, and then they'll be on the field Sunday. So let's jump into this and talk about some matchups. Let's look at the Packers offense against this Seattle defense. I think that's really what everybody wants to see, given, you know, what Seattle is known for and the fact that the Packers offense should be pretty good this season. So what jumps out to you right away?
Well, first of all, let's mention that we have our pads on right now. So they may have finished their padded practice, but we have padded practice all week. So I feel ready to go. Next, offense versus defense. Packers offense versus Seahawks defense. That's what you asked me, right?
That's what I asked you.
I was thinking about that line about pads. Okay, here's what I see is, as always, Seattle's front four is really good. And you're going to see a lot of twists and a lot of games up front. They're going to rush four. They're going to keep Cam Chancellor near the line of scrimmage. And they're going to play their classic cover three the majority of the time. Now, what they can do is try to spread Seattle out. And I think the biggest question mark with Seattle is their depth at corner. And you could try to spread them out, which is fine. Then you get to their fourth corner. But then can you pass block? Can you pass block with five guys? That becomes the question mark. Do you need to keep your back in? Do you need to keep the tight end in? I think that's going to be really a telling tale, is how well they pass block those four guys. Seattle's not going to blitz. They don't blitz a lot.
So one of the questions that I wanted to ask running backs coach Ben Sermons yesterday, but he was sort of ushered off the podium as I was just getting ready to ask him, was, you know, given the fact that Montgomery is inexperienced as a pass blocker, the three rookies are obviously inexperienced as pass blockers at this particular level, is it the type of thing where for the first couple of weeks we can kind of expect to see Ripkowski as a little bit of their third down running back, because that's the guy that Rodgers, you know, definitely trusts at this point? I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if Ripkowski played a decent number of snaps against Seattle. What do you think?
Could be. I think they're going to want – I think that'll be something they read as the game goes on. I think they want Montgomery in the game. They want a threat out of the backfield. They want someone who can catch. Seattle's linebackers are really fast, K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner, and they can cover a lot of the field. But if they can get Montgomery matched up and he turns out to be as difficult to tackle as they think he's going to be, then that might be a pretty good matchup for them all game long. And if they keep hitting checkdowns across the middle to him, that's going to really soften up Seattle's defense, and it's going to cause Earl Thomas to come up. It's going to cause the linebackers to suck up a little bit. And so I really see Montgomery playing a lot in this game, provided, you know, he stays healthy and he's got the endurance to do it.
So if I remember correctly, Wagner and Wright never leave the field, right?
No.
So
yeah,
They've got two linebackers 100% of the time. Now, what is that? Why is that different from what the Packers do? Well, it essentially means that they don't have a dime defense. They're playing nickel at all times, right?
They will take one of the guys out and play a dime defense. If you're going to, you know, I think if you're going to run five or four wide receivers, they'll play a dime. But they feel like, especially when they play that cover three, that if they can play with a nickel and cover your guys. They feel like they can play a zone that they'll close so fast on your guys that you're going to have a hard time. First of all, you're going to have a hard time running past the sticks. And then if you don't run past the sticks, they're going to come and close on you and get you before you get the first down. So that's kind of what their philosophy is, I think.
I'm kind of curious to see how the Packers approach running the football with some of the personnel that they have now, because, you know, they've got the ability to use these two tight end sets if they want to, with Bennett and Kendricks or Bennett and Richard Rodgers, whatever two guys they choose. Bennett would obviously be one of them for his blocking ability. And then the other thing that dawned on me is if they don't want to go power for power against Seattle, they could try and run out of some spread formations with just Montgomery in the backfield.
They could.
And three and four receivers split out. Or maybe they have a three receivers and a tight end at the line, and then the tight end walks out. And do you think that's something that they might try?
They could. You know, one thing they could do is try to draw Cam Chancellor out of the box with Bennett by splitting him out some and seeing whether Cam Chancellor will come out there and cover him. If he does, then I see that scenario where they could do a lot of draw plays to Montgomery. They could do some spread and then run the ball with him. I think based on McCarthy's history, he's going to come out throwing.
No
question.
He's going to
come out spreading them out, and he's going to find out whether Jeremy Lane is a legitimate starting corner and whether their rookie corner Shaquille Griffin can cover. And I think you'll see them pick on him quite a bit if they can.
When Ben Sermons spoke yesterday, he talked about how he's kind of waiting to see how teams react to Montgomery this year. Mm-hmm. Will they treat him as just a running back with good receiving skills, I think is the way he phrased it, or will they still kind of view him as this gimmick-type player that mm-hmm. has to be defended in different ways? So
right.
When Montgomery first became, you know, this running back last season, there was a ton of snaps where he lined up in the backfield and then Rodgers would motion him in and out mm-hmm. as a coverage indicator. Do you think that the Packers will do that early on to try and see how Seattle reacts to him?
I don't think they need to as much because of Seattle's predictability on defense. Now, there will be times that they will want to figure out whether they're in man because Seattle will go to man coverage, but they're just not a fancy defense. They just believe that what they do, they can do better than what you do. And they're not going to blitz a whole lot. Like I said, they'll run some stunts up front, but they just feel like they can manhandle you and that they're so fast to the ball that you're going to have a hard time moving the ball down the field on them. So
you've seen every Packers-Seahawks game in which Richard Sherman is involved, mm-hmm. and there seems to be different levels with which Rodgers decides to challenge him or not challenge mm-hmm. him. Can you sort of describe how that's evolved over the years?
Well, you know, it really becomes that one game where they avoided him completely. And that was just the dumbest thing, one of the dumbest things they've ever done. And they basically took Jordy Nelson out of the game, and they took a third of the field out of the game. I mean, that's the equivalent of when you used to play Deion Sanders, was you knew that you couldn't throw that way. So here you gave that to them against your best receiver. Since then, they've been more willing to throw at them. They threw at Sherman last year. All their corners struggled because they didn't have Earl Thomas. When you play that defense, you need to have Earl Thomas covering the middle for you so that, you know, you can press and all that. I think Sherman and Davante Adams are going to have one heck of a matchup. I'm really eager to watch that. I think they're going to be battling all day. I think Sherman will probably – they'll probably send Davante Adams out that way quite a bit because he's physical. He can block Sherman. And I really want to see how that manifests itself. But they're also not stupid. They're going to go after the rookie if they can.
No question.
If he's not getting double help – you know, then they're going to go after him.
So Rodgers was asked earlier this week about Richard Sherman in particular, and his answer was pretty short, so I want to read it real quickly. He was essentially asked if you know, Sherman is as good as advertised still, you know, at this age. And, mm-hmm. and he said, yeah, for sure. And he's one of the best, if not the best, corners in the league still. I've got a ton of respect for him. I don't like throwing him the ball. I'll try not to do it on Sunday. Now, that last part, I think he's obviously trying to say that I'm not going to try and throw interceptions.
Yes, that's what
But do you think there's anything to the fact that he still doesn't want to throw to that side of the field?
I don't think it was that he didn't want to. I think that was the game plan.
Gotcha.
You know, I think that was McCarthy's game plan. I think Rodgers is he wants to challenge people, and he believes in his wide receivers. So you're going to have to throw his way at some point. If they the way Seattle funnels your receivers into certain areas, there's going to be times where you're going to have man coverage with him, and you're going to have to try to throw to him. So you know, I don't know about Seattle's defense yet. I know people are saying they got a chance to be really good, especially with Sheldon Richardson being added, if he plays the way they hope. But I really want to see what the lack of depth at corner means for them.
I agree with you completely that McCarthy is not going to be able to help himself, and he's going to be calling a lot of pass plays. I am sort of, I don't know, I guess with the up and down in terms of how often we saw the running game in training camp, I just kind of am curious to see how it plays out. You know, how much are they going to actually use anybody other than Montgomery? How often are they going to use Williams or Jones? And so then I started looking, you know, again, I mentioned that I watched the tape of last year's game back again, and Montgomery actually played pretty well in that game. He had a number of slicing runs where he was able to rip off 6 or 7 or 8 at a time. And I think there's a little bit of an asterisk that comes with it because Seattle was getting beaten so bad that it was clear that, you know, the effort dipped. But they were able to run the ball on him a little bit. And I know that McCarthy has trouble establishing the run because he likes to throw it so much. But with as good as Montgomery has looked, I think there's some opportunities there to pick up some yards with his slashing ability.
Yeah, you know, Sermon's made a good point, which is you can't hesitate against them. You want to. And I thought it was interesting because he wants his backs to be patient, but Seattle's defense is so fast that you got to just take it and go. And I think that's one thing that Montgomery has done pretty well, is stuck his foot in the ground and gone. So I think there's just myriad ways this game could go, where it really kind of depends on, I think, the two teams feeling each other out. And they have an idea of what they want to do, but I think the one that's more flexible, the team that's more flexible and figures out how to react, is going to be the one that wins.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your prediction for run-pass balance for the Packers? I know everyone's going to ask about it, especially given the way last year finished.
Yeah. Oh, you mean for the season?
No, for this game.
For this game, I think it's going to be close to, it'll be 65-35.
I was going to say 70-30. So I think especially if Rodgers looks good early and they can pick up some yards, I think McCarthy's just going to go haywire and just pass.
Yeah, well, it all depends on how good the offensive line plays. And he's very confident in his tackles, even with Bulaga having a little bit of an ankle injury. I think he really believes in those guys, and he's got the ability, if they're pass blocking, to spread Seattle out. And just, you know, the way to beat them is you're not going to get a lot of big plays on them, but if you keep moving the ball, you keep hitting, you know, in between the little zones, you can move the ball down on the field on them.
Anything else Packers offense against Seattle defense before we flip sides?
I would say probably that watch sort of the interior. I'm curious to see how Jari Evans and Lindsley work together, and whether there might be some. I mean, that's where Richardson will be. Jaron Reed will be there a little bit. Frank Clark, even. I want to see whether they Seattle can get penetration up the middle, because if they do that, then the Packers have to change what they're doing. Then they're not going to be able to sit back and pass and spread guys out.
Absolutely. And I think Evans is going to be very, very a really good indication of what sort of potential they have on this offensive line all season. Mm-hmm. If Lane Taylor plays the same way he did last year and the other guys do as well, it really comes down to whether or not Jari Evans can match that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge indication, I think, of how much success they have as a line this season.
Yeah, I think that's true.
All right, let's flip to the other side. So now we're talking about Seattle offense against Green Bay defense, and I think that everything is going to probably start and finish with whether or not that Seattle offensive line can hold up.
Yeah,
it was a disaster last season. Russell Wilson was sacked 41 times, one less than the league high. And at least on paper, it doesn't look like they improved a whole lot since last season. How big of an issue is this going to be for Seattle?
Well, they're sort of in the boat Green Bay was a little some years ago when they were still waiting for some of these young guys to get a little bit better and to fill with a couple of veterans. You know, they had Lang and Sitton, but they didn't have Clifton was gone, and they were playing with Marshall Newhouse and Derek Sherrod. And I think they've solidified themselves a little bit. I think Justin Britt's gotten better. Glowinski will be better. Losing George Fant was a big blow at left tackle, but all they really need to do is keep teams off balance with their play action game, and that'll slow things down a little bit and give Wilson a chance to do some stuff. But I think Capers is going to go after Wilson. I think he's going to start out by bringing Burnett up in the box, whether it's the nitro or just coming up in the box, and he's going to make them try to beat him throwing the ball from the pocket. I think that's what their goal is going to be.
So there was one exhibition game. Was it Philadelphia, maybe, when they blitzed constantly?
Yeah.
So they had a ton of inside linebacker blitzes, especially, where one or both guys were coming right through the A-gaps. And, you know, If you want to label a strength on this Seattle line, it probably is the interior more so than the tackles at this point. And so I don't know if that was designed just to test it out and see what Capers thought of his guys blitzing, but I wonder if it at all had any sort of an eye toward what they would want to try early in the season.
I think their signature blitz is going to be their slot corner blitz. I think we're going to see that all year long. And I think he showed his hand a little bit with some blitzes where he brings the slot corner and then he brings one guy up the middle that forces the running back to make a decision which guy he's going to have to take. And it sort of screws up the offensive line. And I think there'll be times he'll bring both slot. If there's, two slot guys, he'll bring both of them. He'll bring a safety in the slot. I'm really interested to see how that goes. Of course, that requires Seattle to pretty much run three wide receivers, but they'll do that with Jimmy Graham anyway. So I think you'll see a lot of nickel defense. I think you'll see some blitzes from there. But it's the combinations that are going to be the whole key to it, how they can force Seattle to react to those blitzes.
I think that for Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, this is probably a pretty good team for them to start out against, because, of course Seattle and Green Bay is essentially a marquee matchup, but the tackle position is an area of weakness. And so for two guys that could probably use a confidence boost, and for guys that would like to get off faster than slower because there is a little bit of thinness there at that position, I think the idea of going up against a new left tackle that has never started at left tackle has to be appetizing. And so Fant is out, as you mentioned, with a torn ACL, and Reese Odhiambo comes in. And so I asked Perry earlier this week sort of to describe what it's like to go up against a tackle that maybe you've watched tons of film on because you play him every year, mm-hmm. versus a guy that you've never played against before or that has never played tackle before. And his answer kind of surprised me a little bit. I thought that for sure he was the type of guy that really put in a lot of film study to try and break down what guys do. And he said, I do watch film. I don't want to discredit that. He said, but at the end of the day, there's only so much that you can carry over from film to the field, and I kind of like to go on the offensive against tackles, where I like to be really aggressive right away to see how they react to me, not necessarily me trying to feel out what the strengths of the tackle are. Mm-hmm. Based on, you know, outside backers that you've talked to over the years, have guys – What level of film study is important for these guys going against tackles?
Well, really, it's kind of how the guy sets, whether he's good with his hands, whether he's good at getting his hands on you, whether he has a quick, you know, kick step out of his stance. I think it's a lot of that kind of stuff. You sort of analyze what you want to do, what your game plan is going to be going in, and then you adjust after that. I think in this game, what really intrigues me is how they're going to line up Brooks, Ahmad Brooks, Perry, and Matthews, because there's a lot of different combinations they can use. And so some of their rushing won't be against tackles. It's going to be against guards.
Good
and
point.
It's going to be twists and stunts and things like that. And I am really interested to see whether they've developed anything in just a week of having Brooks. I don't think it'll be – my guess is that everything that they've got – will be Matthews-centered. So Matthews will be doing everything from the middle. I'm talking about on passing downs, you know, when they're in their nickel or dime defense. But instead of having Fackrell and Perry on the outside, it'll be Ahmad Brooks and Perry on the outside. And that changes a lot.
So you don't expect Matthews to be on the edge on third downs anymore?
I'm not saying all the time.
Okay.
I'm saying that this is the thing that that's very intriguing, is how they're going to use him. I do think we'll see him a lot in the middle on third down. He likes to be outside, but until Ahmad Brooks learns how to play the inside there, I think Matthews will be the guy inside.
So we saw all kinds of different things that they tried with Matthews and Perry in camp. We saw them lining up as traditional outside linebackers. We saw them lining up over the guards with two defensive ends or two defensive tackles wide of them. We saw both Matthews and Perry on the same side of the line of scrimmage. We saw Matthews, Perry, Fackrell, and Elliott all on the field at the same time.
Right.
And when I asked Nick Perry about this flexibility, this ability to move around, his eyes kind of lit up a little bit, and he said, "We love that. That's so much fun for us." How different is that than when Matthews first came into the league? And I think you and Bob used to tell me that he lined up almost exclusively at right outside backer.
On one side, yeah. And he was really, really good at it. He was really good against the run, and he was really good rushing the passer.
So why the evolution?
I think it has to do with personnel. I think you do this based on where you're at. So Mike Daniels has the ability to kind of shift around. He's not a stationary player, and so that changes things a little bit. I think teams spread you out more now, and so they don't play much 3-4 anymore.
That's
true.
You know,
a lot of that was when they were playing 3-4, and they almost – you very rarely see them in their base defense anymore. So that's what's evolved, and, you know, they've kind of learned to use Clay Matthews in a little bit different way, because you want to keep him away from double teams. And one of the ways of doing that is threaten him from the outside and get him a one-on-one on the inside.
So we talked about the front seven in terms of, you know, pass rush against this offensive line. Let's move back into the secondary when it comes to the passing game. It looks like by the end of camp it was Devon House and Demaryius Randall as the top two corners, and then Quentin Rollins in the slot. It sounds like there might even be some in-game adjustments to that, where sometimes Randall goes into the slot for a series, or, you know, maybe even Gunter, I guess, depending on the situation. You know, the safety spots are pretty solidified, but do you expect a lot of rotation among the corners, even in the course of the same game?
I do. I think there will be some switching around. I think they're going to get Kevin King on the field no matter what. I think he's not a bad matchup for Paul Richardson. you know, and they still have to match up with their receivers, and then they still have to cover Jimmy Graham, and that's going to be a really big test. They did a really good job with that last December when they had Burnett follow him around pretty much, and I don't know if Seattle's better at receiver now than they were back then. You know, they don't have Jermaine Kearse anymore.
I think
anymore.
They might be a little worse, honestly.
Yeah, you know, they still have Doug Baldwin, who's really good. They still have
Tyler Lockett.
They got Luke Wilson, who can, you know, is another tight end they can use down the field. They're gonna put some pressure on that secondary. But to answer your question, I think we'll see some rotating. I think we'll see some situations where we'll definitely see Josh Jones on the field at some point. I don't know, you know, probably in the middle where Morgan Burnett lines up in Nitro. I think we'll see him there some. But, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. So Josh Jones, in a lot of ways, was sort of the darling of OTAs and training camp with the, you know, the obvious speed and athleticism, the ways they were using him. And so, you know, the argument or the debate about how quickly to get him onto the field and in what areas is going to be something to keep an eye on. And I wonder, you mentioned this at practice yesterday, if they might sort of give him one thing, you know, that Nitro role and specialize there and keep any contribution at safety for later in the year. Is that sort of what you think they'll do?
Yeah. Teams, if he's on the field, teams are going to try to isolate him. And he, you know, I'm sure Seattle feels like, even as good an athlete as he is, Jimmy Graham on him will be a huge mismatch.
Agreed.
He's never seen a tight end like Jimmy Graham before. And I think that's the kind of thing you have to look for. They're going to prepare for that kind of stuff. And how he handles that, or how Capers, what position Capers puts him in, that's probably going to be the big question with him and how much he plays.
Coverage of tight ends is something that was an area of weakness at times for the Packers last season. You know, when you look back at the game that you mentioned, or the Seattle game rather, with Burnett on Graham, that was a huge win for the Packers. But, I mean, that Tennessee game, Bryce was just destroyed by Delanie Walker.
Yeah, Delanie Walker destroyed everybody on that day.
And so you mentioned Jones against tight ends potentially being a mismatch. I'd like to see what improvements or lack of improvements Bryce has made in covering tight ends, because I think there's going to be some times, maybe not in this game in particular, but definitely throughout the season, where he is going to be matched up on those guys. And we saw that he was gambling at times. He tried to go for the ball instead of going for the man. He wasn't able to tackle soundly. That, to me, is definitely something to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of that is off of play action. And so if Seattle's running the ball, then they're gonna run a lot of play action. They're going to run read option. And you're going to have to be really disciplined against them, because, you know, you take a false step in that read option or in the play action and you're out of the play. All of a sudden you're gone, especially for those inside linebackers. You know, Martinez, who's consistently takes a bad step, you know, on that. That'll be a really key thing.
So Burnett and Jones aside, what sort of distribution of playing time do you think there'll be among the quote-unquote traditional inside linebackers, Joe Thomas, Jake Ryan, Blake Martinez?
I think Martinez and Ryan start basically in the – whether they start in nickel or base. I think on first downs, that's what you'll see, those guys. They got to have those guys on the field against Lacy and even Rawls. I don't know – with a guy like Lacy, I don't know how you can play much Nitro with Burnett up.
Or much Joe Thomas, even.
Even Joe Thomas, yeah. You got to have two guys with some heft to them. And I think they have to go that way. Now, that's going to be really advantageous for Seattle, because with all the play action, with getting the back out into the flats and things like that, they will have some advantage there. So that'll be a cat-and-mouse game for sure.
Now let's talk about the Seattle running game a little bit. You know, with that offensive line being clearly a weakness, or at least not necessarily a strength. Do you think that they can run on this Packers defense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, one thing about their run game is you don't have to be a great lineman. You just have to be able to move laterally and dive at a guy's knees, because it's that zone game where they're half the line's trying to put you on the ground and the other half's just trying to guide you out of the play and create a big lane. And you, I even mentioned this to Quentin Dial, who probably will play a little bit on Sunday and has played Seattle twice a year plus some playoffs. You know, I said, you probably know Seattle pretty well, and they're going to be diving at your ankles. And he's like, yeah, all day long, you know. And you have to, he said, you never get used to that. And that's going to be a big deal for guys like Kenny Clark and Dial and Lowry. And, you know, Mike Daniels is so built low to the ground that he's pretty good at handling that. But there's a lot of guys who are going to be diving at their ankles. And they can, I think Seattle could get a running game going.
Given that the Packers have a few guys with, if not a propensity, at least a history of missing tackles at times, whether it's Clinton Dix or Bryce or Blake Martinez, even some of the corners when they're in run support, how do you think, or how much confidence can the Packers really have in their ability to bring down Lacy if the line holds up well and he actually gets some lanes?
Well, if I saw, if what I saw during the exhibition season was any kind of indication of how the regular season is, and it never is, I saw the Packers get to the ball faster than I've ever seen in numbers. I've always seen, I think we've talked about this before, you know, one guy gets there, then finally the second guy gets there, and then the third guy gets there. I've seen more, their team speed getting to the ball has been way better than it's I've ever seen it. And to me, that's what you got to do. You got to get three guys to the ball, not one guy who tries to bring Lacy down. You got to have three guys to really cover and get him moving. And the other thing, and we talked about this too, is you got to get him moving laterally. You got to really plug up the middle and force him to try to bounce.
So Lacy and Rawls, first and second down guys, and then Procise, their pass catching back, that to me is something that I don't know how they're going to deal with Procise, because if you start, you know, if like you mentioned, if they're able to have success running the ball, then you need, you know, Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez in there. Procise is the worst possible guy to match up with Martinez and Ryan, because that's a guy that played wide receiver for a year at Notre Dame. This is a guy that knows how to beat, you know, players at the cornerback position, let alone inside backer. And so then I wonder if you start having to match him up with safeties, and even there I think that's a potential advantage for Seattle.
Yeah, you really don't want to do that if you can help it. I think you want a corner on him if you can.
And he had a huge game against New England at the end of last year.
Yeah, and the way you, to my thinking, the way that you stop him from being a factor is you blitz, and then you force him to block. So that means being really aggressive. That also leaves you open to, if you don't get there, Russell Wilson busting up the middle, you know, with a scramble. But I think they have to put pressure on Wilson, and the best way to take out, you know, that third down running back is to bring someone and force him to block.
And so the last piece of this puzzle is Wilson. You know, this is a guy who threw five picks the last time he was at Lambeau Field last year, a couple of them off tips, one where Jimmy Graham looked like he slipped and fell. But he hasn't had, you know, tremendous games against the Packers. He struggled a bit.
Yeah, well, he's got 10 picks in his last three games against them, five in one game, four in another game. But, you know, I see a lot of people picking him as a potential MVP this year, and I hadn't really thought about it, and I hadn't spent a lot of time watching Seattle this offseason or this training camp during the summer. But a lot of what you read is that he's really having a good year and he's poised to have a big year. So let's find out. You know, I want to know. And I don't know if there's anything I'm missing with Seattle, if it's, you know, I'm too close to Green Bay and all I've been focusing in is on Green Bay. But I see the Packers having a lot of advantages, and only that they can put some pressure on Wilson, and that I think that'll be the whole key to the game.
And then let's look at special teams briefly. Mm-hmm. How dangerous is Tyler Lockett? We heard Zook talk about him yesterday. Zook said he thinks he's in the top three punt returners and kick returners in the league. I was reading some reports yesterday that said he's back to being healthy. He was a little nicked up, but mm-hmm. he's ready to go. That could be a huge problem for the Packers.
Well, if Vogel punts the way he punted against the Rams, they'll be fine. If he starts kicking wobblers or right down the middle, then they're going to have a problem. A lot of this, their coverage units are very good, but they're not very good if you don't have a very good, if your punter's not helping them out. So if he's got some hang time, then I think they're fine. And I think Crosby will try to kick the ball out of the end zone every single time.
I think so too, which was essentially what he used to do against Cordarrelle Patterson, mm-hmm. just essentially boot it as far as he can. And that's not what he did against every team, but against these top returners, it's what they have to do. You know, from what you saw from Trevor Davis and Janis, now Davis had the punt return touchdown. He had a couple other big returns. So we know that their punt return game, they're going to have confidence there. Janis said that he thinks that they were really, really close on a couple of them. And Davis said that he thought the same thing when he watched Janis. Janis said that last year,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they always say that.
I didn't necessarily
think... One block
think,
away,
you know? I didn't think their kick return game looked that great during the exhibition games.
And you know, I've just come to believe that the kick return game is worthless. It's a lot of practice for nothing.
Tell that to Jermaine Whitehead.
Yeah. It's a lot of practice for balls that are going out of the end zone. And even when they're not, the defenders are so close that you just don't see very much. Yeah, there's a reason why they're one block away because, you know, those guys are right down on them. And so, yes, there's probably lots of times when you're one block away from breaking it. But that's the whole idea is that the team covering you wants it to be that way or figures it's going to stop you one way or the other. One of those guys is going to get free to stop you. So I don't put much stock into that. I also want to see Trevor Davis catch the ball cleanly, or I want to see if he catches the
Absolutely.
Ball cleanly. And, you know, that thing could go to pot really fast. All you need is one or two of those to happen in a game, and the guy loses his confidence.
And then Randall Cobb's returning punts.
Well, Randall Cobb or Quentin Rollins or Max McCaffrey, where's he? Bring him back.
New Orleans.
Yeah, they could sign him back, and he could be their punt returner.
Anything else on special teams or Seattle's offense here?
I think I've pretty much clean the cabinet. You know, I will say one thing. This is a really hard exercise when you haven't seen either team play a regular season game.
Yeah.
It's so much of it is speculation. And my brain has gone back and forth over, okay, how is each team going to attack each other? And it like twists you in a knot. I can only imagine what the coaches are going through. But it's so hard without having seen either team yet, and I feel like I'm either going to sound like you're going to go back on Monday and you're going to call me the dumbest SOB you've ever heard in your life, or you're going to say that guy kind of knew what he was talking about, but he's still pretty bad on the podcast.
So there's no way to win.
I mean, either way, they're going to attack me. You guys, stop it.
Now, we haven't made our picks yet, but it's Seattle +3.
Right.
Is what I saw, and I think that's about right. We're going to make our picks, you know, shortly later today. It actually might be up by now, the video with our picks. I don't know if you want to share yours, but I'm going with Green Bay. I think they're going to win it.
Yeah, I do too. I'm going to give them the home field advantage, and I'm just going to try to figure out whether I know what the hell I'm talking about, because on paper, I see the Packers being able to win this by a decent amount. I don't think it's a 3-point game. I think it's a bigger margin than that in Green Bay's favor. But this is going to really decide whether I know enough about Seattle, and my guess is I don't.
So what you're saying is this will directly influence our listenership next week on the podcast.
Yeah.
Things will plummet.
If I'm completely wrong on this, I think you should go to the Seattle Seahawks podcast, you know, and just forget this one from now on. Or at least just write in and have them tell them that you never want to hear me again on this podcast, that you already got a good guy in Mike. So
there you have it. That's everything you can possibly want to know about Seahawks-Packers. There's going to be tons of additional coverage in the next couple days up on PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com, including your crack at a 1-53 on Sunday. So,
boy, I'm going to try to fill Bob McGinn's shoes. Man, nobody can do that, huh?
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
And don't forget the live blog. I want you to think live blog. Live blog, live blog. Get on there on Sunday and try it if you haven't tried it before. It's a lot of fun.
And first thing Monday, we'll have another podcast for you. Until then, we will talk to you soon.
See ya. Oh,